Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Wrestling Is Cool podcast. I'm Santi, that sick, itty little bitty sideshow with a little stomach ache, and he's using a little heating pad to make his stomach ache go away. How are you, buddy?
I'm hanging in there, brother. You know, when you get a certain age, you can't just treat yourself. I was watching Royal Rumble in review, because we had to make up for the little Patreon snafus. The where's that Patreon referee? And I thought, Santi, why not I have a little ice cream, you know? A little ice cream to myself. So if you watch the review, Santi, I'm just sitting there happy as a clam, sitting on my little stump with my little oyster, and I'm just yum, 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 yum. And here's the result.
And now, right here. And now you're and now, sitting here with a little heating pad on your stomach. Pathetic.
Those old rubber things where you put the hot water in, you know what I mean?
Like, no, I remember those. I remember those.
It's getting dark here, Salty. Please help me tell Paul I love him.
Well, folks,
if this was the olden days, I'd be dead.
Oh, dude, you'd be dead. Yeah. They'd look at you and be like, oh, Sancho already made it past the age of 25. He's lived a good life.
No. Well, folks, that's my fear in life.
What, dying in the old west style?
Yes, traveling back in time, dude. That sounds awful. When I was a kid, people were like, would you want to live in the old west? And I'd be like, no, I would die of dysentery. That's the common thing. IBS does not do well in the old west.
Dysentery is where like your intestines just fall out of your butt, right?
I think it's you just dry out from just the amount of liquids you excrete.
Oh, okay. I thought that was dysentery. Anyways, I do.
I diverticulitis.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
We're not doctors here.
I'm not a scientist.
If you're here to get your medical advice, folks, you've made a grave mistake. You have made a giant error. But folks, welcome to the Wrestling Is Cool podcast, the coolest wrestling podcast on the planet. Just like WWE, we bring you a premium live event seemingly every week, because that's what WWE schedule is looking like for the rest of the summer. But of course, you could be getting this episode 3 days earlier than everywhere else over on patreon.com/SantiZap. Not only will you get the podcast 3 days early, but you'll get the Raw reviews, the SmackDown reviews. You will get our 5 weekly Match Club watch alongs that you vote for. You get the new John Cena Road to 17 series that we have on Patreon, Sancho's Royal Rumble series, and so much more. So go check it out. For $5, you get access to all of the content we post daily, except this weekend where Patreon was like, nah, it's not gonna work for us, brother. Sancho, I have a question for you. You know, last week, a lot of people really liked the conversation regarding the snail. And I brought another snail conversation for you. I'm wondering if you're going to put the snail over, or if this time, you know, you're going to make the snail do the job. I want you to pretend that we live in a universe where there is an immortal snail, the immortal snail Hogan. All right. It's just slugging away for you, brother. This snail at all times is slugging its way towards you. This snail cannot be stopped by walls, barriers, natural barriers like oceans or anything like that. It is always moving in a straight line. And if it touches you, you die. Are you surviving the snail, and for how long?
This is the It Follows. You ever seen It Follows?
I've seen It Follows, but this time it's a snail, brother. It's Hulk Hogan's snail.
I don't have a out like in It Follows where I pass it to somebody, you know,
How do you pass it to somebody in It Follows, Sancho? How do you pass it?
A little zesty pins left and right, you know? You gotta get out of there somehow. There's no out, there's nothing.
No, there's no out. I'll juice it up for you. You get $100 million. You know, you get to live a great life. Will you take the $100 million knowing that the immortal Hulk snail is coming for you, brother? If it touches you, you die.
Isn't that life, brother? Isn't the immortal snail always following us, brother?
There's always that. Dude, that's very philosophical. Too philosophical for Wrestling Is Cool. I'm talking about a literal snail. Literal snail just slugging its way.
Yeah, dude, why not, man? At least I would have moments would be a cool party trick. Like, you see that little snail right there?
You're just shit talking because you see it. Yeah. Pussy.
And then I just get it a plate, and then it'll take like another couple of months to come to me. Why not? The thing is like where it follows, where it started to get creepy is like you couldn't go to sleep. So they had like little alarm systems. I would hire a guard definitely with that $100 million. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
No, but the guard wouldn't be able to like shoot the snail. He would just be able to tell you it's there.
No,
right?
No, sell it. He would no sell
the Yo, what the if the snail? Yeah. What if the snail makes a deal with the guard?
Oh man.
Oh screwed. Buddy, you're done.
Oh buddy. I mean,
but you're right though. I don't think you'd be able to sleep. Yeah, if the snail attached itself to like a jet and it's moving way faster towards you than you could expect, right? You think the snail's all the way down in Thailand and you've moved all the way back to California and you think that you have years, but maybe you only have days. You let your guard down. Snail says, it's not going to work for me, brother, and you die. I don't know, man. I feel like that'd be a really panic-inducing life to just constantly be looking over your shoulder and down at your feet for this snail. Like, would you ever feel comfortable being under a blanket?
No. I mean, I would make, can I make a panic room or the snail will be able to go through it?
Snail goes through everything. It is a complete beeline towards you. Wow. No walls, no natural barriers. Nothing stops this snail.
Oh, gas, no brakes. This is basically Triple H booking, right?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah, dude, what if like when the snail is within, what if the snail is within 10 meters of you or I don't know, what is that, like 7 feet? I don't know what that in freedom units.
I'm not scientist here.
All right. What if whenever it's within a certain range, actually let's call it 100 miles. All right. If it's within 100 miles of you, all of a sudden in your head, you hear Jacob Fatu's theme and you hear it throughout the entire time that the snail's within 100 miles of you. That'd be pretty terrifying.
It would be. It would be. I would rather have Solo Sikoa. Taking it all.
I think I could successfully evade the snail for my whole life, but you do have to be on the move. That's the thing. You got to be on the move like pretty regularly, but you know, you could make an unforced error. You could move, but maybe you actually move closer to the snail because you don't know where the snail is.
What if I flew in a hot air balloon?
Ooh.
No, that's where I slept. But you know, that way there's no way. You know what the snail would do? It would get in a plane and then parachute into my hot air balloon.
Like that's you relentless. Said, man. All gas, no brakes, brother, like you said.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no, you gotta say it more like Joe Tessitore. Yar, I mean.
Yar, I mean. I wish they would give a note like, yo, y'all making it kind of corny. Y'all need to chill on that. But hey, I'm not here to be pessimistic Pete, all right? That's not me today. I am lucid. I am heat padded up, brother, you know? I'm just trying to hold it together. You know what I mean? This is that day where it's just any crack in the armor, I'm back on the saddle.
It's all right. Honestly, there isn't a heck of a whole lot to talk about. We're off the backs of one of the more uneventful episodes of Monday Night Raw. So this might be one of the shorter episodes, if you ask me. But I do want to start things off by talking about Sabu. Terry Brunk passed away. One of my personal favorite ECW originals. The dude was
RVD.
Oh my goodness. He's above RVD, way above RVD. Lots of people are above RVD. You know this. But man, I could probably pinpoint 10 of like the craziest moments I've seen in professional wrestling. And like 6 or 7 of them are Sabu. That is a guy that put his body on the line, day in, day out for entertainment, to appease a certain portion of wrestling fans that like that style of professional wrestling, and passing away at 60, man, that's entirely too soon. So wanted to give condolences to the family of Terry Brunk, Sabu, and just wanted to, just to take a moment to say I'm going to miss the dude, because so many cool moments, man, were created by Sabu. One of the funniest moments we've ever seen in professional wrestling, by the way. I don't think you and I have ever cackled as much was Sabu versus RVD, which is on Match Club. It's cool, funny, cool memories like that that will always last with Sabu. Do you have a Sabu memory?
Sabu was always outside my, like, in my peripheral vision when it comes to wrestling fandom, because he was an ECW. I never could watch ECW. That was when I started to wean off of wrestling. And I never could afford those pay-per-views and things of that sort. I barely could afford WWE pay-per-views at the time. So all, you know, I knew what he looked like and I knew the vibe he brought, but I'd never really sat down and watched a full Sabu match until Match Club, believe it or not. It just shows you that, man, life after wrestling is probably the most difficult thing for these performers. You know, if you don't have, you didn't take care of your money and you didn't take care of your body, you're going to have a rough road. And it's, you know, Sabu did it until the very end for him. It reminds me definitely of the movie The Wrestler, man. One of my favorite movies of all time, The Wrestler.
A Sabu biopic would be very interesting. The man's been everywhere, probably dealing with some of the sketchiest bookers throughout professional wrestling all over the world. But yeah, man, like I'm kind of with you with the ECW side of Sabu. I didn't discover that until much later on in my fandom. For me, my introduction to Sabu was the WWE version of Sabu in ECW One Night Stand in 2005, 2006, and then a short time with WWE afterwards. I saw some stuff of his in TNA, but most of my exposure to Sabu were like matches after the fact where it's just like, oh, you got to go back and watch this crazy Sabu match. Sabu just had an insane match in the Indies. You have to go back and watch it. So it was a lot of that, but yeah, man, it's always sad to lose a performer that's, you know, part of this ecosystem because it's a tight knit ecosystem, man. Professional wrestling, man. A stone can cast a lot of ripples in this world. And I do believe that Sabu had many of those ripples for sure. But yeah, just wanted to start off the podcast by talking about that. Yeah, I think we got to move on here and talk more, I guess, traditional wrestling stuff. I wanted to kick things off here, Sancho, with a topic that's creating a lot of buzz in the wrestling circles. So Saturday night's main event, but the one that is scheduled for, let me confirm, for July 12th, all right? Saturday night's main event for July 12th was announced well after the announcement of AEW All In that was also scheduled for July 12th. In response, AEW moves All In to the afternoon, to 2 p.m., giving that primetime night spot to Saturday night's main event. Right now, it is being heavily rumored that the women's PLE Evolution will be July 12th in the early afternoon to directly compete head-to-head against AEW's biggest show of the year, All In. So this, to me, is a very, very clear-cut case of WWE trying to strangle AEW's biggest show. I've got some thoughts on it, but I wanted to pass the baton to you first. When you hear this, what are your initial thoughts? What are you thinking?
Business is business, and business is cutthroat. So main thing I want to say is, though, is that the WWE is they need to be careful. Every wrestler you talk to says a healthy ecosystem is good for business. And having two competing brands, even though one may not be as popular in terms of viewership or attendance records, still has the ability to compete financially with contracts at WWE. They're trying to definitely snuff out AEW, but they're trying to do it in resources ways. They did it with the WWE ID. They're going to try to take talent away from there. They already cut off the AAA. They're going to take talent away from there. They already cut off Noah and so on and so on. So the WWE is systematically trying to disassemble the avenues of revenue for AEW. But I think it is a huge disservice to us, the fans, because it would suck to be able to not enjoy weren't we talking about you and I going to All In?
Yes.
Like actually attending All In, because it's like, oh, perfect. There's nothing in WWE. We could go to Texas up north and enjoy it, have a good time, hang out. But now, considering our main income is covering WWE, if WWE drops Saturday Night Main Event and especially Evolution, which is much more monumental for the state of wrestling to have an all-women's PLE again, especially with the roster that the WWE has underneath their belt, it would suck. It just sucks for us more than anything. Do you know what I feel like right now? Remember that part in Old School where Will Ferrell is just spitting out like crazy facts and when he's just in that little competition for the triathlete?
Yes.
Whatever. That's me right now. And I'm like, ugh.
Mm-hmm. I feel that. I feel what you're saying, man. I think it is cruddy for the fans for sure. I would love to have been able to go to AEW All In. Obviously, I'm in a weird situation where me, you, and many others, we cover WWE, and that is our livelihood. So now that prevents us from being able to cover All In. Maybe that was part of the plan. It's kind of worked, you know, to prevent the content creators from focusing on All In. But this also obviously sucks for the fans that are now going to have to spend an entire day watching professional wrestling if they want to be up to date with everything. But I also think that this is a disservice if it does end up happening this way, specifically to the women. All right. This is putting the women in a situation where it's not just sink or swim, you know? I'm always of the mind, like in business, you know, I've ran businesses before. I've worked for large organizations, small organizations, startups. I'm always of the mind that it's totally fair to let somebody sink or swim. Show me what you've got. Do you got it or do you not got it? And if they were to put in an all women's PLE, I'm okay if WWE were to put it in a situation where, like, you really think we need a women's PLE? All right, here's your chance, sink or swim. I wouldn't mind if it failed on its own merits. I would love for it to succeed. But if it were to fail, I prefer for it to fail on its own merits. It went down swinging. This is a situation where I feel where WWE isn't putting Evolution in a sink or swim scenario. They're putting it in a sink or swim scenario, but they're starting Evolution 10 feet underwater first, by making it go head to head against AEW's biggest show of the entire year. That is going to take away eyeballs from that. And if it does fail, unfortunately, fans and everyone around the world will likely point to, like, no, it wasn't because it was a women's show. It was because of all these other external factors that you surrounded this show by, putting it on the same day as Saturday night's main event, head to head against AEW All In, the competition's biggest show of the year. But when it comes to the bottom line, the spreadsheets, the numbers on TKO, all they're going to see is a failed all women's PLE. And I think that that's unfair. If it's going to fail, if it's going to sink, let it sink in its own merit. So that way people can say, okay, we need to go intergender. That's the way to go. But if this does fail and it happens to be booked on the same day as AEW All In, I'm going to point at that. I'm going to point at that being the reason why. But I feel like TKO might just use it as an scapegoat to say, see, people don't actually want all women's PLEs, and that sucks. The fact that that scapegoat could even exist, to me, that sucks.
I think it's a challenge for the women's roster to go up against the secondary promotion and say, hey, we are here too. I think the women can show out, though. I mean, oftentimes lately, the women have been stealing the night of the match when it comes to Mania. Sometimes their Royal Rumbles are a little bit better. But to go up against an AEW, well, you have to think about it, Santi. It's like, is that AEW crowd, are they trying to compete for that crowd? Are they trying to take away from that crowd? And you got to also add to it that afternoon wrestling is kind of hard to watch, man. It's a tough spot. It's a time spot. Who knows what's happening sports-wise at that time? So I see what you're saying. I think the women of the roster are used to this kind of shenanigans, and they'll definitely show out. They always do, like the triple threat at Mania, where they didn't have zero storyline heading into it, and they showed out. I'm concerned it's like with Bianca Belair definitely out. You know, they definitely lose a lot of star power there. But I'm hoping that they bring in some other outside sources, like make this like a forbidden door for women's wrestling. But you know how that works. They're not going to be like AEW. They're not going to invite you to the dance if you're not under contract.
Yeah.
Because they don't want what happened with AEW. I'm excited. I'm thinking they're trying to see what Tony Khan would do. If this is a rumor, does Tony Khan blink an eye? He obviously can't really change anything because he's so far in.
He's already moved, right? He's stuck.
Right. Right. So fascinating. It's an interesting part of the business, man. It kind of reminds me of like bigger streamers just doing things to snuff out the smaller streamer. It's just, that's the way it is, man. As a smaller streamer, you just got to go, all right, move on to the next one.
I don't love this business practice. You steal
my thunder all the time.
That's what I do, man.
You were like, instead of taking the night off, you put your dumb chair and took thousands of viewers, took food off my table, took food away from Con Man, from Wheezy, from Minnie, for your dumb little joke of having a chair with 1,000 brain-rotted Santi Slammers watching. That's you. You have no say in this fight.
You don't want those people that came to watch a chair in your stream. You don't want them in your chat.
That's what I'm saying. Does WWE want those AEW fans? I think so.
I would assume so.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, they want the ones that want some good wrestling, but it depends. What's the main event, you know? Are you going to go back and forth? One's on Peacock, one's kind of free. You already have it. You could easily go back and forth.
That's right. Actually, that's a great point that you make. Like Saturday night's main event in the United States, at least, it's on NBC, right? Primetime TV channel that almost everybody has. Around the world, it's going to be on YouTube. Accessible to literally everybody. And then Women's Evolution will be on around the world, Netflix or Peacock, whatever it might be. So very easily accessible. AEW pay-per-views are not accessible.
They're not accessible.
You do have to drop down. I know it's different for every region. I'm talking about Canada. $49.99
On TSN?
Here's the weird thing about AEW pay-per-views. They're like, yeah, you can buy it on TSN. You can buy it here too. You can buy it there as well. So it does kind of create like this confusing messaging as to like, okay, so I guess I can buy it wherever I want, but I still have to drop $50. Like if it's on the TSN app in Canada, do I have to already have the TSN premium subscription to be able to buy AEW? I know I can purchase it on YouTube. Do I need YouTube premium? Like there can be some confusing conversations regarding that. And if you are I'm literally putting myself in the shoes of like 14-13 year old Santi when I would like have to go ask my parents, can we buy SummerSlam, can we buy Backlash, Taboo Tuesday, whatever it might be. Now all of a sudden you're putting that barrier in front of the kids today, right? That might want to watch All In, right? Now they have to go to mom and dad to ask for the credit card. Can I buy this thing for $50 on YouTube? Blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, kid, just watch on Netflix, just watch on Peacock. We already have that. So yeah, accessibility will also, it will always be in the favor of the WWE. That's for sure. So now two accessible WWE shows on the same day as AEW All In, that really constricts AEW in my opinion.
The thing that my first experience buying AEW is I bought it, I think on Bleacher Report at the time.
When I bought it,
I could not go back in time because I bought it like late main event. So I wanted to watch the rest of the card, but I didn't buy the replay.
What?
You know what I mean? The package that did not include the replay. Oh, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It was crazy, dude. Crazy.
Yeah, that's you got scammed, brother. You got scammed. Yeah,
that's why Bleacher Report doesn't have it anymore. What can I say?
Yeah, I've always bought them on YouTube. YouTube Smart. Has them. I don't think that they can block me rewinding and going back. I think that's just part of the YouTube Live ecosystem and player. So yeah, that's where I would suggest for people to buy their AEW pay-per-views if it's available for you in that region. But yeah, I just wanted to talk about that because it's a very diabolical business practice that the WWE is employing, and it is
Do you know what's diabolical? I'm sorry to cut you off. That the number one t-shirt seller, Karrion Kross, gets settle time. That's zero for some folks out there. Zero time on Monday Night Raw. And you might, oh, but Sancho, he got 2 seconds lurking in the background. Who's this over here? Oh, it's Little Karrion watching from a distance. Little Karrion giving the New Day the t-shirts. Ridiculous. His promo is 100% correct. The man said, be undeniable, go viral, except for you, except for me, Karrion Kross. What a ridiculous thing, dude. Triple H cannot sit there and go, well, you're not the number one merch seller, because he is. You know who was the number one merch seller at Royal Rumble, sir? Do you know who was?
Who?
Main event Jey Uso. Four letters, one word, eat. Ridiculous that Karrion Kross, who had an opportunity to get a rocket strapped to his back, a tick-a-tock, make his way up the card and do something with his viral moment, gets absolutely nada. Zip. Zilch. Zero time, only on commercials, only on main event. What does this guy have to do to get out of jail? Is he in trouble for calling out the suit executive when he said F you to the guy in the suit in the truck? Mehaps. Is he in trouble for making his own documentary during WrestleMania? I don't know. But apparently, according to WWE resources, and according to Scarlett, I believe, he goes out there and gets his own production and hires people to make his own stuff. This man wants it, Santi. This man wants it more. Didn't Triple H say in an interview that he wants grinders, that he wants people who wants it, that he is not going to hire someone who's not going to show up to all the events, that wants to get flown across the country to fly back home? He wants somebody that wants to be there. And there is somebody right there, Santi, that's there saying, love me. And that is Karrion Kross.
I have to agree with that. Literally every single thing that you said. So many people, when I made my Money in the Bank predictions in terms of like what matches are going to be there, I left Karrion Kross out of the Money in the Bank ladder match. And everyone in the comments are like, well, how can you not include Karrion Kross? Obviously Karrion Kross. Obviously? Really? You really think that anything is obvious with Karrion Kross right now? This guy is the number one merch seller, the most viral guy in WWE, the one that the fans want to see. People, he'll appear in backstage segments and you can hear the crowd roar. We have all of these circumstances happening and they still do not feature him at all. Those little background moments, I wouldn't even be surprised if they weren't even planted, that he just like, hey, let me just get in there, brother. Like, let me just get a second of screen time while the camera is around here. Commercial moments, they don't, that's not a thing. Like, they don't get seen by the majority of the fans. And you think that with all of these circumstances, the fact that WWE is still not featuring him, that he's going to get on Money in the Bank? I would love for him to, but smart money says probably not the way that things are going. I think it's ridiculous at this point. You've got him as, you, like you said, the number one merch sales guy. All right, so he's proven himself to you. He's proven himself to be a draw. He's proven himself to be a desired asset by your paying customers. And
inside the arena too.
In the arena too. And Triple H, you know, let's not forget the thing that you said, where now it's a little bit of a foot in your mouth moment that you care about what happens with the crowds in the arena. You're hearing it from the crowds in the arena that they want Karrion Kross. This is not an internet wrestling community thing. This is wrestling fans want Karrion Kross and he is not being featured. And I know what's going to happen, dude. Maybe this will happen where somewhere deep down the line, he'll get a push and then people will say, see, you just have to let Papa H cook. Brother, you have your customers lining up wanting to buy your product right now in Karrion Kross. Right now is the hottest he's probably going to be. And you still are not presenting him to us? He must be in trouble. I don't know if it's because of what he said about the suit. That'd be kind of hypocritical considering Triple H was like the biggest menace to society in the 90s. And that's how he got over. It's a shame, man, because I've been won over by Karrion Kross. Seriously, genuinely been won over by Karrion Kross. This is a guy I want to see more of. And it's just bizarre that in a world where people are clamoring for this guy, WWE is withholding him. I don't get it.
You think it's one of those situations of, since we can't have it, we want it more? That's a kind of dangerous line to dance on, brother. Because then when you're like, well, it seems as you don't care about what we want, so why should we care about what you're pushing? A la a Roman Reigns, you know? We all wanted that Daniel Bryan, and hey, how about the big dog? We're like, no, don't want this. So I'm interested, dude. I think Karrion Kross is, like you said, he's a good soldier. But when he has an opportunity to elevate himself, they just don't give it to him. It's a bummer. It's a shame. And you could say, well, he could do it in another company. I don't think so. What is going to happen is you get like a watered-down version of this. And this goes both ways. When Matt Hardy got himself over in TNA as the ultimate, yes. And then when he came to WWE, you're like, this is watered down, retreaded. And that's the same thing you're going to get when he goes to TNA, right? It's going to be a watered-down, retreaded type vibe. Unless he gets the reins and does what he wants. But I don't think that's the case. There's so many outside factors for Karrion Kross. And I'm just upset because his in-ring is incredible. When we see him in-ring, he has a sick moveset. And he definitely displayed that sick moveset in GCW's and Bloodsport. Like, that was like the coolest he's ever looked when he's rocking the jiu-jitsu gear. Like, he looks amazing. And hey, dude, he has it all. I don't understand. Help it make sense. That's all I ask.
I can't make it make sense for you because I'm also equally confused. I genuinely do not get it. I understood it when, you know, he was uninteresting, when people weren't really asking for him. The Final Testament stuff wasn't working. But I think it would be crazy if maybe they're holding that over him. Like, yeah, we tried, it didn't work. It's like, yeah, but like circumstances have changed. It's different. You know, people now want to see this versus back then people just didn't care. And now, and now you don't want to pull the trigger on it simply because you already pulled the trigger on it before and it didn't land. Like I said, man, I'm a big fan in the business world of sink or swim. Let him fail. Let him at least have an opportunity to fail. If you don't think that he's this asset, but you have all of the right pieces of evidence telling you that right now is the best time to let Karrion Kross sink or swim, because he has the best opportunity to swim and succeed. But if he fails, if he sucks, at least let it be on his own accord, because right now he's not even getting that opportunity to fail.
He should have been a backlash against AJ Styles. Where did that feud go?
Yeah.
He's literally saying, Allen, you let the whole wrestling business down, and they had that moment in Mania, and then where do we go, dude?
I forgot about that. I forgot Karrion was literally in the Mania match. And yeah, they've not collected on this at all.
With Logan Paul stopping the brass knuck spot. Like, it does, like, and that, Logan's not even pissed about that at all either.
Could it be that they're waiting for Saturday night's main event to be over to reinsert Logan Paul into this? Because right now, Logan Paul's kind of handcuffed to this Jey Uso feud. Maybe they're waiting for Saturday night's main event to end so that they can reignite the storyline of AJ losing to Logan and putting Karrion Kross back in. That's me being obviously very optimistic, right? But I will say Saturday night's main event does always kind of create start-stop situations for many feuds and create some weird situations. And maybe this is one of those.
I don't know, man. I'm just hoping that Karrion finds his way. He feels lost, but I think that what's working for him is that he's not deterred.
He's not letting himself be forgotten. I think that's the big thing. He's doing everything in his power to make sure that you remember that they're keeping him away from you. And that's working. It clearly is working.
And I want to point out as well quickly before we move on, it's like people are like, he should join Seth Rollins' faction. I just don't see him. He needs time on the microphone to get himself solidify him getting over. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see him as a lackey. He's more of a lone wolf at this point, you know, pointing out the wrongs and kind of being an apparition around there. He can't be Seth Rollins. Is like what works right now with Seth Rollins and Braun Breaker. Seth Rollins comes out looking like the Matrix, all dripped out in that brown leather jacket. He's looking really cool and cerebral, literally like Triple H. And he goes, leans in and grabs Braun Breaker, and he's like, go ahead and go get CM Punk. I'm like, dude, that stuff's sick, right? I don't see a Karrion Kross fitting that mold unless he's like, he's even crazier than Seth Rollins. Like, he is the chaotic energy in the group, and he's outlandish. But that's not the Karrion that I'm in love with now. I like the Karrion that is tactical, and he's moving.
He's the puppet master.
Yeah, he's a puppet. Like, I bought the shirt.
Yeah.
The shirt is literally him with the strings. I'm like, ooh, I bought that. And I bought a card. I bought a card that he signed. Only $50. Not a bad deal. A signed card.
$50. It could be an investment, man. Maybe if they actually pull the trigger on this guy sometime soon and he catapults himself to the moon, maybe. Hey, that's why I have my
he's reaching out for something in the back here.
My Dewdrop card, you know? I'm waiting for that moment that Piper Nevin gets pushed to the moon, brother, and becomes the biggest star in the business. Right here, this is an investment.
Did she sign it as Dewdrop or Piper?
I can't tell. I think it's Piper Nevin.
Okay.
I think it's Piper Nevin, yeah.
But it's Dewdrop on the card.
It's a Dewdrop card, yeah. Dewdrop.
I just recently saw the Royal Rumble 2023, where that was Triple H's Royal Rumble, and how all the women got their names back. Piper Nevin got her name back. Chelsea Green returned. Nia Jax returned. So it's quite interesting to see Piper like actually get a lot of good moments in that Rumble.
What's a Dewdrop, bro? What is that?
Dog, I just remember when I was in college, there was a girl that we called Dewdrop because she was farting in the backstage.
Oh. All right. Is that some? Is dewdrop something to do with farts?
I have no clue, but that's the. I was not a part of it. Did not give the name. Did not call her that.
Over there, you, got, you guys were doing some Vince McMahon bullying over there.
No, no.
Not you. Not you. Not I'm you. Mean, okay. So I've already kind of alluded to this, right? So, Sancho, I want you to hear this list. All right. Okay. You ready for this? All right. So
I am ready.
Over the next. All right. So between May 24th. And August 31st. So that is a total of, so June, July, August, a total of 3 months. So 9 weeks. Let's make it 10 weeks. Cause I'm starting here at May 25th in the amount of 10 weeks. Here are the WWE premium live events that we have. Battleground, Worlds Collide, Money in the Bank, Night of Champions, Saturday night's main event. Wait, hang on. Oh, no. Starting at the 24th. Sorry. Saturday night's main event, Battleground, Worlds Collide, Money in the Bank, Night of Champions, Saturday night's main event, SummerSlam Night 1, SummerSlam Night 2, and Clash in Paris. 9, and the rumored Women's Evolution. So we have, based on this schedule, a WWE premium night of wrestling every single week of the summer. So my question to you, Sancho, is that too much? That is a lot. That is a lot of wrestling, man.
You ask my wife, she would say so, especially during the summer. It's not going to make her happy when
So I texted Sarah. I'm like, these are the nights I'm unavailable. And it was like the whole summer.
Oh no, I'm going to have to miss some of them. No, dude, it kind of reminds me, be nice to me. Okay. I'm not feeling well.
Okay.
Kind of reminds me of Fortnite. Okay. Now Fortnite during the summer drops.
I'm everything. Giving, yeah, go ahead.
Drops everything. They give all the content because they know everyone's at home. So that's what they're trying to do. I think they're trying to get younger demographic. Everybody's at home. Everyone has the ability to watch this wrestling. And they're just taking advantage of the roster. Now, what's interesting to me, yeah, you can have all the PLEs in the world, Santi, but I'm sick of seeing the same feuds over and over again. The same feuds. I don't need another Gunther and Jey Uso. You give me more different variety in the talent that you have. Why not have LA Knight and Jey Uso as a little filler feud? Why not expand your horizons and put Gunther on the shelf for a little bit so I could see something else? When Meechan lost to Chelsea Green, we immediately saw Meechan versus Chelsea Green. When Dakota Kai lost to Lyra, we saw Dakota Kai and Lyra right away. Are you telling me that this roster is not that vast that you can't have another person contend for the title, be the number one contender? How many times am I going to watch New Day versus War Raiders? Jeez, I thought that ended at Mania, and here I am seeing them again on Monday Night Raw. It's kind of ridiculous, my friend. And that's why we all get upset during releases, because it's like you have so much time and you have so much opportunities, like 10 PLEs to build out. It's like you have so much water. You have so much plants in this garden and you're only watering a couple plants, brother. Spread it out.
No,
I the succulents. By the way, Mitch perished.
Oh, I thought it was CM succulent. Plant.
Well, CM Plant is gone.
So. Oh, he's dead.
I think the dual PC setup was just way too much.
Just too much radiation. But yeah, man, like 10 nights of WWE premium wrestling in 12 weeks or 12, 13 weeks is a lot. And when you have that much down the pipeline of the summer, you would think and slash would want variety within the buildup to all of these shows. But we also have very little time to build to these shows. Look at like this complete hodgepodge of a feud that has been Jey Uso versus Logan Paul. It's just been all over the damn place. In fact, they've been building Jey Uso's other feuds alongside the Logan Paul feud. You've got Jey Uso feuding with Gunther again and feuding with Seth Rollins and his faction, all while building up to this match with Logan Paul. So it's with this crazy hectic summer schedule of WWE premium live events, I think that you're going to see a lot of this. And because of the short amount of time between PLEs, I wouldn't be surprised if WWE is more comfortable rehashing things that they already know they can write for easily than to try something new that I think would be better.
Give me LA Knight, Jey Uso, Yeet versus Yeah. It writes itself. How complicated do you need it to be? LA Knight comes out of this music, looks at Jey Uso, goes, yeah, Yeet, yeah, Yeet. Now we have a match. That's all you need. What, I mean, am I crazy here? Put him in a couple of tag team matches. Have Nick Aldis put him in a tag team match. Why not? And then you can be like, Sancho, they're not on the same brand. I don't care. Spread it out. Spread the love out.
No, I'm with you 100%. I feel like the rehashing of Jey Uso and Gunther is weird, which, by the way, like, WWE just isn't even attempting to try anymore with Saturday Night's Main Event. They don't even want to make you believe that it's a show where things of importance can happen. Like, they basically may as well have told us that Jey Uso versus Logan Paul, Jey Uso is winning. Not that I ever thought otherwise, but I would like WWE to at least pretend like it could happen. Because obviously that match between Gunther and whoever wins is not going to be Logan Paul. They basically completely telegraphed that it's going to be Jey Uso in that Royal Rumble match. It reminds me of when they announced Jey Uso versus Gunther at last Saturday night's main event, when the week prior, Jey Uso was the first one to declare himself for the Royal Rumble. It's like, well, then if he's going to be in the Rumble, he's obviously not going to be the champion. Again, I didn't think Jey Uso was going to win, but like, pretend, you know, like at least put a little song and dance to make me want to tune into Saturday night's main event. Like, something special might happen. But no, man, at this point, WWE is very clear and apparent that, like, yeah, this is just a showcase event. This is just a... This is for the lowest common denominator. We're not going to move the needle here. Storylines aren't going to change. And I've been fooled enough times by Saturday night's main event that I will not be fooled again. I will still watch it. I will still consume, but I will not be expecting anything.
Look at you. You flying this flag. It reminds me of when someone in your comments goes, you don't have to watch everything.
Dude, my favorite comments that we get in our podcast clips is, you guys need to just watch and stop talking so much about the products. Like, you idiot. It's a podcast. The whole purpose of this is to talk about what we're watching. You moron. God.
Yes, yes. You let the hate flow, Santi. Yes. You know who else? Is in Fortnite? Emperor Palpatine is in Fortnite.
Nope, you've already hit your Fortnite quota. You've already stopped. You've hit your Fortnite quota. Enough. I want to talk about Penta here real quick for a second.
Enough.
You get one Fortnite conversation per podcast, right. And you try to sneak in a second one. Yeah, No. I got a question for you. Penta, real quick here. Do you think that the Penta singles run, the Penta singles experiment, I don't want to say that it's a failure, but do you think it's running its course? Do you think it's over? Because I look at, you know, I'm doing the Doctor Strange, looking at the 14 million different scenarios, and almost all of them end with him and Rey Fénix as a tag team. And now that I'm seeing him being involved in the Judgment Day, constantly being outmanned, outgunned, always having to deal with a 2-on-1, 3-on-1, 4-on-1 in some scenarios, like he had to have Backlash. Eventually you would think that he's going to try and even out the odds, even out the numbers. And to me, I'm already sniffing it out that we're going to have Rey Fénix around the corner, and it's going to be Lucha Brothers versus the Judgment Day. And then once that happens, man, I think the singles career of both of them in the WWE is over. I think it's just, it's tag team and moving tag team merchandise from here on out.
It's funny that you say that, because I legit felt the same way too after watching the last Penta match. You could just feel it in the air that they are meant to be together. They are probably the original plans was to put them together, and because of the delayed contract, they took a pit stop for getting Penta a little bit over as a singles. But it's clear as day.
Would it work?
Because it's gonna be awesome. Yeah, he got over, but I feel that they had no plans to go ahead and present single star to capture singles gold. I think if he caught, let's say Penta won at the WrestleMania, right? He got the IC title. That would further delay this reunion of Rey Fénix and Penta. I think it's the right decision to do now. I don't know if they're going to be stuck in tag team hell. a la like an FTR and AEW where they were there and there was no one else, and then FTR just got a bunch of belts and they just kept collecting belts for a little bit, aka the Revival. Maybe they put them together just in time for Worlds Collide, you know, to have them be at Worlds Collide against Judgment Day. That'd be kind of sick, you know, Carlito and JD or Finn versus the Lucha Brothers. Like something like that would go a long way. Yeah, man, I don't mind it. I love Penta, and I think Penta's cooler than in terms of Rey Fénix, in terms of just overall presentation and just the amount of reverence that Penta has stocked up so quickly. Like him appearing on Chris Van Vliet and on Sheamus, like all those kind of appearances for him really set that in. I don't think Rey has gotten that opportunity. And I just feel like Rey Fénix is now trapped in this weird vortex in SmackDown where he's with Legato and Andrade. And you're like, oh no, this is where we didn't want you to fall into, but he fell into it. And it's as if Penta fell into LWO, but he didn't. So, hey, I'm for it. I don't know if it's at the end of the day, will Penta be a single star, but I do see them holding on to the AAA Tag Team Championships and holding on to the WWE. And they're going to come out with like four belts. I think that'll look cool.
I think it's ideal for WWE to just copy the AEW model for the Lucha Brothers, where it was like, yeah, they work as a tag team, but yeah, we could run with them for a couple months as single stars because they did a pretty good job at highlighting Rey Fénix and Penta on their own whenever they needed to. But then they also could operate nicely as a tag team as well. I would like that personally, because I do, you know, as much as Rey Fénix isn't quite as over, shall we say, as Penta, and it might not even be that he's not as good as Penta. It's just that it might be the fact that he's the second one to come on board. You know, like the glitz and shine was, and the oohs and ahs were given to Penta, and now it's like, oh, we've seen this before. We've seen something like this. So you don't really get all of the reverence and the love that Penta got when he initially came around. But I would love for them to explore a world where they can allow the Lucha Brothers to flow freely between tag team and singles competition.
I feel that if Penta and Rey debuted together, like a la Motor City Machine Guns, they would not be this opportunity where you could see them as single stars. Does that make sense?
I agree, because the Penta experiment as a single star in the WWE worked. Like, I'm sure he didn't win gold, but he got over. He really did get over. He got super popular. Zero Miedo, like, is over with the crowd. And it's funny because everything that's worked for Penta has just not really resonated with Rey Fénix, you know, like right down to like trying to mimic the awesome entrance of Penta. Rey Fénix is his worst. Right down to trying to mimic getting a catchphrase over. Now Rey Fénix is his stupid. It's everything that they've tried with Penta, they've tried with Rey Fénix, but they've done it worse. So I would say that Penta could survive on his own, but I don't think Rey Fénix can. I feel like Rey Fénix needs the Lucha Brothers more than Penta does.
I'm telling you, it's on Match Club. Young Bucks versus Penta Brothers in that cage match. One of the best matches we have on it, dude. So emotional.
This is how much over Penta is, because you just called them the Penta Brothers.
Oh, wow. Chalk it up to the stomach it woes. My stomach is stupid.
That's funny. Yeah, I think that I'm seeing the...
You're seeing tea leaves. Huh?
I'm seeing the tea leaves.
The timelines, huh? You felt the wind of change. You know what's interesting is I didn't mention this during the Karrion Kross. Isn't he just the little canary in the coal mine? When you see him pop up, you know something's going to be heinous. Something's around the corner. That's what I feel like they only use him as. And I feel like Penta is right now, we felt that, the winds of change. Like, we feel it in the air. That's why we hear wrestling school, we're always early.
Isn't there a doomsday fish in the coast of Japan, wherever it like surfaces, you know, that like a nasty earthquake is about to happen somewhere in the Pacific?
Nasty earthquake.
Because like the fish can like feel the vibrations of the tectonic plates.
All right, here we go. According to Google, the oarfish, also known as the doomsday fish, is a deep sea creature that's gained notoriety. Oh, Jesus.
You got
due
this.
To the Japanese words. Folklore belief that is a harbinger of natural disasters like earthquakes and tsunamis. While the belief is not supported by scientific evidence, the oarfish is a large elusive fish with unique appearance.
Yeah.
So it's rare to see. It's like a, you know, Mexican culture when you see an owl. He's like, oh, this is bad luck here when you see an owl chilling in your backyard.
I didn't know that was a thing. I knew about the doomsday fish, and I didn't know that there wasn't scientific evidence. What I read was that, like, they could feel the vibrations of, like, the tectonic plates.
Feel
like,
the shifting. Vibration.
Feel the vibration. They're like, my plates, they're shifting. And then they go all the way up, and then they get seen, and then, like, a nasty tsunami earthquakes are – tsunamis are caused because of earthquakes.
Owls are seen in Mexican culture in the Rio Grande Valley. So, basically – our little Raquel Rodriguez would believe this. They are malevolent. They are a witch. Lechuza.
A lechuza.
Yeah, depicted as a large, terrifying owl, sometimes with a human woman's face, who preys on unsuspecting humans, especially children and drunk individuals.
Why the drunks? Because I've heard a lot of folklore, right? Like, oh, you know, take the children away, right? Like the evil witches, it the clown, right? Like it's always targeting children. But what the drunks do? Why the drunks get targeted this time around?
Drunk people are big children, dude. They are big children. Nothing worse than dealing with a drunk adult, I say.
Oh, yeah. Have you had to deal with a drunk adult within the last 2 years?
Not in the last 2 years. I used to be a door guy at a bar.
That's why I asked. I knew for sure you have. But like now, as an adult that you are now, have you had to deal with a drunk adult, whether it's a friend or family member?
No, but I could spot a drunk mile away when I'm sitting at a bar. I could see one. You could see them because they have a certain look, man. They're like on a different axis of plane of just POV type of vibe. They're not here, you know? They're like somewhere else. They're in the deep end. Or as Rusev would say, the abyss.
I mean, we could talk about Rusev real quick. Any temperature checks on how they're treating the Redeemer right now, man?
I like his vignettes. I think it's... I don't know. It's a terrible shame that they start out with the Alpha Academy because they're just children in the WWE almost. It feels like, you know, they're the children's favorite and then they're going to destroy them just to get a cheap pop. It'd be interesting if you started to mess with Otis. Like, Otis, look at you, Otis. You have such a jacked body. Why can't you stand on your own? You're your own man. Mm. I don't know. I think it's too much Aleister Blackie. You know, they have the same kind of vibe, you know?
I just see too much of a ceiling. Like, I've already seen it. I'm looking up. I'm like, oh, yeah, there it is for you. It's called Below the Intercontinental Championship. I see that ceiling right there.
I think he'd be a great, like, test. That's what I mean. Imagine Jey Uso comes out, does his thing, you know, yeets, picks up the children like the Pied Piper and yeets with them too. And then Rusev music hits. That'd be like, oh, my God. Cool, like they'd be a cool monster of the week. Give him Rusev. It's not gonna bury Rusev because, like you said, Rusev's like really not doing anything mega world, like Worlds Collide type of vibe. He's not moving the needle for us because he's dealing with American Alpha. But if he stepped up to the plate to Jey Uso with his past legacy and he's a changed man, and even if, say, he doesn't beat Jey, he just beats him down to test him to bring the best out of Jey Uso, that'd be sick, dude.
I don't disagree. I wouldn't mind a more of a revolving door of, you know, like you said, Monster of the Weeks coming in. You know, it's like an episode of Power Rangers. You got a new bad guy this week, Jay.
Yeah.
And this week's bad guy is Rusev. That'd be fun.
And then Jey Uso does his little, like all the time the Power Rangers, dude. Everything's going south until they pull out that sword. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're about to die. And then Jey Uso's going to go, and he's going to. Year and then he's gonna hit the splash. I do like main event Jey Uso as a champion. It works really well. The package is there, the vehicle is there, it's all decked out. The kids love him. He brings good feelings. The crowd gets hype. It's a big party. And so when a gooner comes in and they ruin the party, boo, we were having fun. Like, I love it, dude. And there's a little bit more of an edge. I think Jey kind of got caught in his own head about being emotional. Like, that really slowed him down to reach that vulnerability. But in him being a partier and kind of shoving, you know, his new gold in people's faces is fun. I'm like, I'm on board. When I recently watched it with Gunther, I was like, all right, I'm in. Like, this is a fun Jey Uso, and he's gonna continue to go out until I feel like what they should do is like his hubris gets so high and mighty that he burns out when he's doesn't supposed to, you know, like he faces a bit bad that he wasn't ready for, but kind of like in Rocky 3 against Mr. T, he's going to chew you up, Jay. He's going to spit you out and there will be no tomorrow for you. Like that's the kind of way that I think Jey Uso should lose because he takes too much of a big bite for himself.
Like Kofi Kingston losing to Brock Lesnar. Now,
yeah, but that wasn't showcased that way.
It wasn't showcased that way, but like it could have been, right? Like it absolutely could have been showcased that way. Like, yeah, I am a fighting champion and I don't care that you're the beast incarnate. I'll take on everyone. And then he gets eaten alive. It's like, well, yeah, dude, why'd you agree to this? I like Jey Uso as champion. It's growing on me, but like it almost feels like WWE with Jey Uso specifically is just throwing everything at the wall. It's almost too much at once. Like Logan Paul, they're having a really tough time building that because at the same time they're building the thing with Gunther. They're having a really tough time building the Jey Uso thing with Logan Paul because they're also trying to build this storyline with Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker and Paul Heyman. Are you fine with the champion being involved in this many different programs? Don't you feel like maybe this is diluting some of the other ones? I don't mind them diluting the Logan Paul one because it's Saturday night's main event. But again, I would have loved for WWE to at least pretend to try.
I feel like it's more of like a John Wick type situation that everybody has a bullseye for him. They all targeting Jey Uso. I think that's kind of cool. And they played it up that way that Jay's like, I'm not afraid. Yeah, everybody, I could take all of you. That's kind of neat. I think that's the angle. Like if I had to strip away all these annoying promos that's happening and just keep it as bare basic as Jey Uso is the number one target, because the people see him as a beatable champion. So it makes sense for Seth to go after him to win his title back. It makes sense for Logan to think like, oh, this should be an easy win. Gunther just be like, I could do this again. It's just the only issue I have for Gunther's case is like you literally just lost. You literally just lost and took a long time to beat Pat McAfee. How can I believe that you're a changed heel when you just lost and you tapped out? It doesn't work for me. Like, if he destroyed Pat and destroyed maybe Goldberg and then said, I'm ready for Jay, I'm like, okay, this is a different Gunther. This is a scarier Gunther. This is Super Gunther, Super Shredder. You know what I mean?
Dude, you brought up Pat McAfee. It's pretty clear that WWE maybe loves Pat McAfee a little too much. Oh my God. The glaze for Pat McAfee was crazy. It's already crazy enough that they gave him a competitive match with Gunther where he literally hulked out of the freaking sleeper hold. That was crazy. He got respect from Gunther. And then here's where it got egregious, man. In right before Penta versus Chad Gable, and Chad Gable, they get commercial entrances. They get the classic jobber entrance, and then once they come back from commercial, who gets their entrance? Pat McAfee, for some reason, he gets a full-blown entrance to come to commentary, and then they do a video package telling us of how heroic he was at Backlash, and then they cut a commentary table promo. They have Pat McAfee stand on the table to get all of the love and adoration of the fans, and then later in the show, they do the Pat McAfee minute. Like, holy hell! What's going on here? Are they just trying to glaze him so much so that he doesn't leave for college football game day? Newsflash, he is 100% he's going to. I like Pat McAfee, but what was that, dude? Way too much glazing of Pat McAfee. You're an ultimate glazer of LA Knight, so you know what glazing is, and even you could tell from a mile away as a professional glazer that was a lot of glaze on that.
Yeah, that's like if I took 30 minutes of the podcast talking about LA Knight and only LA Knight and just ignored anything you say and kept talking about LA Knight. And guess all that time, and guess who got zero time? Karrion Kross, once again, not even a second to breathe, not even to say hello, not even to pop into frame and do something. Zero time for Karrion Kross. Is Pat McAfee selling shirts? No.
Dude,
Pat McAfee on the merch.
I have no numerical evidence to back this up, but I am willing to put money on the fact that Pat McAfee probably got the most screen time out of anybody on Monday Night Raw.
probably.
Like that was crazy. That was crazy levels of glazing. Well, we already kind of brought up backlash. Let's dive into that. Today's episode might be a little bit shorter. Sancho's not feeling great, so we're kind of here towards the end. Backlash. All right. I had some problems, you know. Oh. Internet was cutting in and out, so I didn't get the best viewing experience. But I did get to rewatch it. So let's go through it real quick. United States Championship match. We have the debut of Jeff Cobb, who helps Jacob Fatu ultimately pick up the victory. We had a sorry, go ahead.
Jacob Fatu.
We also had a gnarly spot where it looked like Drew McIntyre smashed his head off the concrete when he got South of Heaven off the whatever that was, off the riser. He got wet-bud through the table, and it looked like he hit his head. Rumors are that he might have a concussion. Jacob Fatu, still your United States champion. My question is, did we make Solo Sikoa relevant again with Jeff Cobb? Or are they just trying to revive something in the exact same way that they revived it last year?
I think they're just trying to give Jacob Fatu another mini monster, mini boss, before we get to Solo Sikoa. Like, delay that. Or, because it would be awful if Solo Sikoa faced Jacob Fatu first. It should be Jeff Cobb and Jacob Fatu, then get to Solo Sikoa. It's going to build up a way. I like the introduction of Jeff Cobb. It feels interesting that Backlash once again introduces another member of a Solo Sikoa-led faction once again, because this is not the Bloodline. They're no longer the Bloodline anymore, even though Drew McIntyre called them the Bloodline. It's very interesting stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm excited for Jeff Cobb. I think what we always was hoping for was that the United States title would be amplifying Jacob Fatu, and this was just an excuse to do that, showcase that. This is, again, that thing that we brought up earlier in pod. Why have Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre wrestle again? Why have that be the launch plot feud for them to keep going and going? We've already literally Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania, the biggest stage in the world, kicked him in the head with a claymore up against a chair. Why is Damian Priest still around? It makes no sense to me that happened. But in regards to the match, it was fine. It broke into two different parts and two different sections. LA Knight getting screwed once again. I thought those days were over, him getting screwed by Solo Sikoa. That's going to give him some tag team matches on SmackDown. But I thought this match was good. I thought this match was fine. I just wish that LA Knight didn't get the short end and the stick once again. But the problem of screwing over LA Knight so many ways to the sun is that eventually people will get tired of him losing in any kind of way, right? They're gonna go, oh, LA Knight is gonna lose by interference anyway, so why should we care that he might have a chance to win? Because he's always willing to do the job.
My question for these types of matches is, like, what's next for everybody? Like, can I find a definitive path for everybody? I think for Jacob Fatu, it's pretty clear, right? The Jeff Cobb stuff, Solo Sikoa stuff. For Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest, maybe them, you know, each other. That might be the path. Not ideal, but I see it, right? At least there's something. The one I don't see anything for moving forward is LA Knight. And maybe that's by design. Maybe it's, we don't need anything for him right now because he's about to go into Money in the Bank and win the thing. Maybe that's the case. If that's the reason, maybe I could see it.
I could.
Yeah, man. I'm on that world. I could see it.
Application? You said an application? The glaze factory?
I'm a seasonal worker. I'm a seasonal worker. I'd like to be a seasonal worker at the glaze factory. I've never, to be fair, I've hated on your New Day train. But I've never hated on your Glaze Factory. I've always been supportive of your ventures with the Glaze Factory.
Thank you.
I've never kept you down.
You were there when Spirit Halloween was knocking on our door, and you were like, no, we got to support local glazers.
Local.
You were there.
Meet local glazers around you.
Don't make me laugh too hard, brother, please.
Stupid. Then we had a fantastic match. Lyra Valkyria versus Becky Lynch, I thought was awesome. I thought that from a technical standpoint, like just like the actual graps, I thought it was the best match of the night. This is a match that title desperately needed. Mm-hmm. And can we stop the Becky Hogan stuff? Oh my God. Like, it was off the back of Becky Lynch that this title and Lyra Valkyria is getting over. Lyra Valkyria is connecting with the fans. We all knew she was good in ring. We didn't need to be, we didn't need to be proven right, right? That, hey, look at how good she is in the ring. We all already knew that. She just wasn't connecting with the crowd. That was always problema numero uno. And Becky Lynch in this feud allowed her to find a way to connect with the fans. And that is not something that enough people are going to talk about when it comes to Becky Lynch. People will just continue to say, Becky Hogan, she takes too many opportunities away. In fact, she's kind of now leaning into this on Monday Night Raw, saying like, fine, you think I am this terrible person that keeps people down, that doesn't give people opportunities, that prevents people from rising up in this business? I'll become whatever you say I am. I'm going to become that thing. Now you guys are really going to feel what it's like to be kept down by the man. And I'm like, that's a sick line. That's a cool character arc to go down, you know, to accept this hatred from the fans and be like, fine, I'm such a terrible human being. Let's be this terrible human being. And I'll show you what it's actually like to have this terrible human being, because you weren't dealing with this terrible human being. Match was awesome. Lyra Valkyrie is getting over. I'm excited for Becky Lynch's future and to see what this new, it's not going to work for me, brother, version of the man is going to look like. Overall success, in my opinion.
I wish she dropped the name just Becky Hogan. Just say it. We all know.
Yeah.
Just say it. You know, just drop it. And at the same time, I know that match felt like it got called early because it looked like Lyra got hit in the nose and may have been broken. But I like the immediate
My nose!
I love the immediate reaction of Becky jumping her. Like, that's cool that a heel would do that immediately and just keep working that to keep that hot angle alive. I mean, I don't know how it was going to end, but I like this version of Becky. I kind of feel like the WWE universe doesn't want to hear from her, which is kind of a bummer because I find it, like you pointed out, very interesting things to say. I'm hoping that they give her more backstage vignettes and things of that sort to kind of rebuild this up, right? Don't send her out there in the ring too much, because I think what happens is the crowd wets her too early because they think it's funny. You know what I mean? But if they just allow this Becky selfish Lynch to set up properly, then that way, when she gets to the ring, we want to hear what she says. And I think they're doing a great job with that with Rusev, right? We know where Rusev is coming from with his vignettes. We know where Aleister Black is coming from with his vignettes, because they're letting us spend time with them without the crowd. Because as soon as you send it out with the crowd, then that's where things get derailed. I think for Becky is, yes, she's a main eventer and she's been there, done everything in the business almost with WWE, but let's keep her off the in the ring for a bit, just to let her keep building this up. Like, let her do really crappy things backstage, you know, let her like just shove her stardom around in people's faces and not be in the locker room, getting her way, getting her own locker room, stuff like that, to kind of build up this notion that she's being super selfish, so that when she hits the ring, she could kind of just hit the greatest hits of her promos rather than building up to this thing that is very complex that I don't think American audiences can stand to sit around for. Does that make sense?
100%.
As soon as we started getting the one, I'm like, no, she's getting somewhere. Shut up for a second. She's getting somewhere good. I know it's your right to do that. And I love how Becky pushed through and didn't acknowledge it. But I think for Becky to grow as a character, the WWE should invest more time off the ring for her as much as possible.
So we talked about paths moving forward for the four guys in the Fatal 4-Way. What about paths here for Lyra Valkyrie and Becky Lynch? Is it a rematch?
Yeah, I guess you could do
something with Bayley, right? That's still in the air as well. I'm down for this to continue. This has legs. It was really, really good. It has legs for it to go another match. Maybe a triple threat at Evolution. That'd be kind of sick. Mm.
Yeah. I like the idea. I mean, they should have all women's belts on the line in Evolution.
100%. Dude, imagine the US title and Intercontinental title once again get snubbed out of Evolution. That's impossible, right? No way.
Even the tag team. Tag team better
all
be
of them.
Team,
they all better be there. NXT Women's, all of Speed, them. NXT North American. Care. You got to have them all on there. Every single one. I agree. Then we had the Intercontinental Championship match, Dom versus Penta. I'm going to just say this. This match, the way that it went, to me felt like it reinforced my tinfoil hat theory that this match was never meant to be here, that this match was always meant to be on Monday Night Raw, that this was supposed to be Jey Uso versus Logan Paul, because this felt like an episode of Monday Night Raw, like literally, like right down to the formula. The match was fine, it wasn't bad, but It's literally the formula of everything that had been going on Monday Night Raw. Judgment Day getting involved, El Grande Americano getting involved. Literally seeing this almost like picture by picture on previous episodes of Monday Night Raw. Had this exact match happened on this episode of Monday Night Raw, I would have been like, yeah, like this is where it fits. This is where it makes sense. This was filler for the show, in my opinion.
I got to give a shout out to the St. Louis crowd. Speaking of shout outs to Eric Johnson. Monday Night Raw, you were working overtime with that Wrestling Is Cool sign, brother.
Hell yeah.
Working that sign. Beautiful. Thank you. So
we all saw it. I put it on Twitter too.
Patreon member. But I definitely think that the St. Louis crowd really brought this match at least to a PLE level. May not have been like a world banger, but Santi, I think my biggest takeaway from that match was that we're entering the generational run of Dominic Mysterio. Like, we are witnessing that Dom could take a match that we probably should have seen on Monday Night Raw and still make it fun and entertaining. Like, it was, dude, the Suicida to the DDT on the outside was sick. The spot where Penta jumped over the referee was sick, and the Mexican Destroyer on the apron was sick. Like, there's so many moments of this match that I felt like we are witnessing the love of Dom. You know, the crowd's behind Dom. They want to see him do well. They don't want to see him lose. And this is where I started to see, like, ooh, I think Penta doesn't have plans in the singles division if Dominic Mysterio is going to take the flag going forward. So I enjoyed it as a Dominic Mysterio fan a lot, because it was like, ooh, he's being loved now. And he doesn't know time zones, apparently. I don't think he's a flat earther. I think
I don't know, man. I've never seen two time zones at the same time. Just saying. Can't prove it if I haven't seen it. That's how it works.
So when you travel across the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just because they change the clock doesn't mean that all of a sudden, you know, angles are different or something.
That's why you would die to the snail pretty quickly. you stupid snail. Go ahead, touch me. See what happens.
Let's talk about Pat McAfee versus Gunther. I'll let you kind of take the floor on this one. What did you think of this match?
I enjoyed it for what the story was. I think when you take away how we got there, at the end of the day, Gunther got a little bit of his edge back, which is important. I think Gunther reminded the world that he is very hard hitting. I think if you would just take Pat, if Pat McAfee was not part of this match and you put in Ilya Dragunov, you'd be like, ooh, this Gunther's back, right? But because it was against Pat McAfee, that kind of diluted the impact that they were going for. I think it was fun seeing Michael Cole go out there and get in the ring. It's interesting. This is another case of the internet getting ahead of itself and trying to fantasy book Goldberg into it, which I'm guilty of as well. But it's not my fault, because WWE gave us the kind of the tea leaves for it. They gave us the puzzle pieces to fill in all the blanks for Goldberg to show up. I was wishing we would get more either like, hey, Gunther goes all out, attacks Michael Cole. But the moment where he shook the hands of Pat McAfee kind of just made everyone groan. It was groan-inducing, like, oh, man, well, what are we doing? I thought if they were going to do that, then I thought Gunther would have a follow-up backup plan to sucker in Pat McAfee, Michael Cole. Like, oh, I just wanted to show you respect, and then strike and attack. But that wasn't the case, because now he's going after Jey Uso. Not the best marquee match for Gunther to challenge Jey Uso. But I got to say, at least it was entertaining. It was very on the same level of Sami Zayn versus Johnny Knoxville. You know what I mean? Like, there was some moments where like Pat McAfee is eating a chop and he just sells it, you know, a clothesline as well. So it was fun and entertaining, but I did not like the aftertaste.
Yeah. You know what
I mean? The last bite wasn't there.
The reason why I didn't love this, and here's the thing. If I asked you, what was the purpose of this match? And your answer is just to have an entertaining match. I'm like, okay, successful. If that's what it was going for, successful. But when I look at the aftermath of this match, like, what did this accomplish? You know, Gunther didn't get his heat back, because he didn't look like this monster menace to society. The dude that was diabolical and destroyed Pat McAfee, he didn't look like that because it was a competitive match. Great. You made Pat McAfee look great. A non-in-ring combatant, a guy that doesn't move tickets for you, a guy that doesn't sell merch for you. A guy that's not a draw for you. He's entertaining on commentary, but all you really did was put Pat McAfee over. Gunther, on the other hand, he's just back in square zero. He didn't move forward. He didn't move back. This was just a nothing burger for him, right? Sure. So I'm confused as to the overall purpose of this and why it existed, especially with there being no post-match angle. There was no post-match angle with Gunther getting his heat back, you know, destroying both Pat McAfee and Michael Cole. Because if they, he destroyed both of them and then it forced the commentary team to change for the rest of the show, then we would have had a reminder for the rest of the show of what Gunther did. You know, we're not hearing Pat McAfee or Michael Cole because Gunther is so diabolical and so monstrous. But no, it was like Gunther really was never there in the first place. I really thought this was to set up Goldberg, and I don't even think that this is a situation of like wrestling fans fantasy booking themselves into a disappointment. I really think that this is where it made sense. The place where it made the most sense to bring Goldberg back to set up this inevitable retirement match between the two. So again, I asked the question, what was the purpose of this? It was to have an entertaining match. Okay, sure. I'll move on. If it was for anything else, it was completely failed expectations then. Completely failed expectations. So I'll leave it at. Because, again, we asked the question, what's next for everybody? What's next for Pat McAfee to go back to commentary? What's next for Gunther? We know now it's Jey Uso, but like this match did nothing to set us up for that, as you said. This wasn't the great warm-up that we needed for him to go back and chase that world championship. This didn't give him back his edge that he's lost after tapping out at WrestleMania.
I do find it interesting that Jey Uso did not once save his boys.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Very Roman Reigns-esque, you know, not going out to save the fellas. Mm-hmm. Very Roman Reigns-esque.
All my fellas.
All right, let's talk about the main event. John Cena, Randy Orton. I'll take this one first. This match was way better than it had any right to be from like an actual like in-ring affair. I love the fact that they knew their limitations. They were never going to put on a technical marvel, a classic high-flying affair. They worked within their limitations. They recognized that people are here for a nostalgia feed. So that's what they fed us, because it was, and I think I might have actually jotted this down. Yeah, I did. John Cena did a total of 4 attitude adjustments. Randy Orton did a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 RKOs in that match. And we had Randy Orton himself deliver 2 attitude adjustments in this match. It was just a showcase of all the cool moves of these guys, right? How cool was it when Randy countered the AA into the RKO? How cool was it to see the table spots? How cool was it to see Randy Orton crash out? It was just these guys working the things that people want to see, right? They didn't try to do anything new or different. They just knew, hey, people are here to see AAs, RKOs, and see the showcase of John Cena and Randy Orton. Let's just give them that. And I think it worked. I think it worked really, really well.
Felt like an action movie, like a summer blockbuster action movie. You know the actors, you know the plot. They've done this before many a times, and you knew that you were going to leave like excited and happy. And I felt that way. I enjoyed every bit of aspect of that match. I enjoyed it much more than Cody versus Cena, because they were able to lean on the nostalgia that you talked about. And at the same time, I think John and Randy know exactly what they can do and what they could produce. We didn't know what John. I don't think John Cena and Cody knew what they can do either. I will still say, as I have this lingering thought, like a snail, the immortal snail coming towards me, Santi, is that was it worth turning John Cena heel? Because they missed out on an epic opportunity to get a wash of nostalgia, him at his last Mania, seeing this uber babyface go at it against the new uber babyface against Cody. I think there was so much on the table for there that they sacrifice for whatever they're building now. I think John Cena is it reminds me of a very Michelin star chef. He's trying to paint this masterpiece at this last run. And you have to be very patient, because at the end of this match, the post-match was very fascinating. You started to see that this angry man who is bell-hent on ruining his legacy and ruining wrestling started to regret his choices. And I think that's such a nuanced, cool thing that I could latch onto and go like, wait a minute, there's something here that Maybe it's not Cody Rhodes that's going to bring him to the light. Maybe it is John Cena that's going to bring himself to the light. And like Ghostbusters, like in Ghostbusters 2, where love was able to wash away everything, I think John Cena being loved by the fans, constantly be told, thank you, John. No matter how bad you are, John, we're going to love you. And you are the GOAT. And we respect you after every match. It's not an accident, Santi. They're giving him time in the ring by himself to see what's going out there. Go ahead, John Cena, the person. What are you feeling right now? Are you feeling happy? Are you feeling sad? Are you feeling regret? Because it's leaning more into this notion of what's it all for? I sacrificed my entire being of who I am for the 17th title. Because he's looking at the title and he's like, was it worth it? And that's me, right? That's me adding to the sauce of what is he
feeling. And that's cool that you can do that.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So I think it's a very masterful play that John Cena is making. So, and I think there's a lot of trust. And I think for me as a fan, at first I disliked John Cena being a heel. I thought it ran its course preemptively, I admit so. But I think what's more fascinating is seeing what does John Cena have in mind, because it feels so different than like a Rock retirement tour. You know, it feels so different than, let's say, if Roman Reigns retired. John Cena's taken a huge risk by turning heel and giving us a thinking man's journey. You know, it's going to be a fascinating thing, because rather than sacrifice like a level 8 out of 9 pop at Mania, he's shooting for an 11, 12 pop when he turns back to the face when it matters the most. And I think that's going to be the most interesting thing if they could pull this off. That's what I'm watching now for. Can John Cena pull off what he has in mind?
What did you think about the R-Truth ending of the match? Because a lot of people didn't like it. I loved it. I personally loved it.
It's wrestling, baby. That's wrestling. It's
People had the nerve to compare this to Travis Scott in any capacity. It is absolutely not at all like Travis Scott. The only thing that's similar to it is that it's both an interference that helped John Cena win. Travis Scott is a non-wrestling combatant. Travis Scott is a non-wrestling entity. Travis Scott took 30 minutes to get to the ring. Travis Scott was in the main event of WrestleMania and helped make history by making John Cena the 17. R-Truth went out there for 2 seconds to get RKO'd to help Cena retain a championship at a BPLE. He didn't overstay his welcome, and it was built to. It was built towards with the moments that were happening on Monday Night Raw. Hell, it's been built towards for years with this R-Truth shtick of John Cena is my childhood hero. I refuse to listen to the argument at all that this is at all comparable or as bad as the ending of WrestleMania 41. This is way better. Way, 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 way better, and it's not even close.
Hate to break it to you. It's very Roman-like, Roman Reigns-like. Same kind of thing. At the end of the day, bloodline matches always got interfered with. Roman Reigns kept retaining. Eventually, it got tiresome. But I like I mentioned, this is more about John Cena unraveling and coming back to his senses. And if it takes losing Randy Orton and his opportunity, that's great. If it takes losing R-Truth, that's great. I'm all for it, man. It's very interesting. I don't think I've ever seen something done this way that it's a slow, super slow burn. And I'm confident that John Cena could pull it off because he has the acting chops. If you ever watch Peacemaker, there's a scene in the first season where he's drunk inside of a trailer and he's thinking about his past and how he was meant to be this superhero and he fell away from the wayside. It's like so good. And it's so harrowing the way he performs it. And I know like we don't like using that word performing in wrestling, right? John Cena's performing this. I think with his limitations in ring, I think he is still a must watch. He's still a draw. The only thing I'm hoping is that WWE realizes needs to slow down him. His promos are getting grating now, but it's because that's what they're supposed to do. But I still say that even though you're supposed to ruin wrestling and be grating, you still have to make it entertaining. And him saying all these heinous things about Randy Orton and his flailing of the drug test is like, put Randy out there, make that happen. That was such a strange thing. They sent out what Sean Spears to be a fake Randy Orton.
Yeah,
that's the rumor. And then that was just weird. So I'm hoping that the buildups are better. Like now that we've seen the crack in the armor of John Cena maybe becoming a face again, I want the buildups to be a little bit more nuanced as much as John Cena's work in the ring as well.
Okay. Overall, thumbs up or thumbs down for Backlash?
Dude, it was. I tweeted this out. It was 3 hours of awesome wrestling in my mind.
It's fun.
Like it went
it's
by so, went by so fast. I didn't have any problems with it, and I thought it did exactly what it needed to do. And the only thing that was of a bummer is like some of the what's next for people is too same.
Agreed. All right, let's bring it home, folks. Sancho has a little bad tummy. Let's do new heat order, and I'm
these burps though, brother.
I'm taking care of the new heat order here. So, number one, who you got?
Number one.
Truth? In terms of how much we've been talk, how much the conversation has been around him over the last several days?
Who?
R-Truth?
No, he's top three. I mean, I love the press conference afterwards. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I'll put him at three.
Yeah, I think I'm at three.
What about Cena?
I put Randy at one. I thought that match was a great showcase to how awesome Randy Orton is. And as well as ring psychology of him screaming why at R-Truth was really cool.
I'll put Randy at one. I feel comfortable there. Cena two?
Yeah, Cena two. What about any love for Seth Rollins? I mean, clearly they're setting up. We didn't talk much about that where it was a 2v3 situation. And it's clear as day now they're going to add a third man, right?
They have to add a third man, yeah.
Yeah. It's such a weird faction, though. I like the idea of the backstage moment with CM Punk and Sammy's like, I don't trust you, you don't trust me. But we need to get together to beat these guys. If not, we're going to lose. So many interesting things. I'm just hoping that the third, like, I think when I'm healthier and I'm feeling better, we should deep dive into this third man because it's probably one of the most viral questions everyone has right now in the WWE is who's the third man. Hmm. But where does Seth fall in CM Punk? I thought Seth looked cool. I thought Paul Heyman looked cool, stepping up to CM Punk. That was cool. CM Punk calling him a penguin, you know?
True. What about, I think Jey Uso is ahead of all of them right now.
Yeah.
Would you put Jey at 4, 5?
Yeah, I'll put Jey at 4.
All right, Jey Uso. Pat McAfee somewhere in here?
Off the list.
Off the
list. Shove down our throats, brother. No thanks. Jeff Cobb, where'd you want? I put Jeff Cobb like at 10.
Shouldn't we put him at like 5? That's a big debut. Fine, I'll put Jeff Cobb at 10.
I think it's because he debuted with Solo Sikoa. That kind of, I was not expecting that. Were you expecting him to be
with Solo Sikoa? No, I was not expecting it to be with Solo. No, not at all. All right, so number 10, Jeff Cobb.
Alistair had a decent match against, that match was not that good. Now I think about the Carmelo Hayes match.
Yeah, could have been better.
It was over before. Yeah, it could have been better. It was a roll-up. Rusev didn't do much. Any love for Jade? Jade Cargill, Naomi? I mean, Jade.
That Jade Cargill, you know what? Her stepping up there as Charlotte. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'll put Jade at like 7.
Yes, I like that. Decent match with Nia, too.
Nia won, which is crazy.
I know.
Maybe Io and
ooh, Io, yeah.
Io and Rhea. They did win the main event of Raw. I'll do 5 and 6 for Io and
okay. Any love for Julia or Roxy? They're bad. They're
but they're losing.
Anything for the tag division or like with War Raiders, New Day? No. Karen, you know what?
Fraxium, bro. Fraxium beat the champions.
The Street Profits? I am so confused. Are Street Profits heels or faces?
I have no idea.
They don't even feel like tweeners either. Like, Dawkins came out and got a cheap heat pop about the sports team. And I'm like, what are you doing? And then they, you know, like rather than go like, yeah, Fraxium, you want to step up to the plate? Let's do it. They're like, you're not worth our time. You're not worth our time. You're the third time on the roster. So it was a weird way to put Street Profits to feel like more like heels.
I'll put Fraxium at 9.
Yeah, I like that.
And then we need number 8. Who comes to mind here?
Dom?
Ooh, I like Dom. Yeah, beating Penta, the time zone thing. All right. Here is the new heat order. I know I'm reversed, backwards. So I'm going to read it for you guys. At number 1, we have Randy Orton. Number 2, we have John Cena. Number 3, we have R-Truth. At number 4, Jey Uso. Number 5, Io Sky. Number 6, Rhea Ripley. Number 7, Jade Cargill. Number 8, Dominic Mysterio. Number 9, Fraxium. And number 10, Jeff Cobb. That is the new heat order. Who is creating the buzz and the conversation, not who we think is the best. That is the essence of this. But Sacho, I think we could bring it home here. Just do our shout-outs to our $15 patrons. And send you off on your merry way so that you can rest your little belly.
My go to the royal throne, you know what I mean?
Oh, take the a big old dump.
No!
big ass dump. Gross. Gross. Well, folks, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Wrestling is Cool podcast. An extra special thank you goes out to our $15 patrons. They are our producers of the show. They are the ones that get their names read out here at the end of every episode. So shout outs go out to Dominic Mysterio is the GOAT. First patron, I Crazy Dude, says W. Santi's 2.5 incher. Also, I Hate Abby. Ace 1151. Adam Elysium. Aiden S. Alex Regal. Alex, Alfie, the co-WWE predictions champ, all hail Dirty Dom, Alan, the Teflon Don, Armado Beltre, American Nightmare, Cody Lander, Andrew S., Anthony A., Antonio Arjona, Antony, Arbok, Arrogance, Asperlitz, Aussie Kingslayer, Austin Hoglin, Authentic Chocolate, Bailey Saunders, Bay Pluto, BFT is the skull-crushing finale with less steps, B Hostile, Big Man Bob, Blake De La Cruz, Blast Pass 64, Bluefish 13, Bobby 871409, Brad the Nerd, Brady Keaton, Brandon, Bronze Strokes Men, Bravado, Brandon Richards, Brody Cyphers, Bryce Burt, Caleb Parker, Caleb Williams, Cameron Warring, Cameron Talks WWE, Carlos Gonzalez, CB, Chase, Chase Rose, Chimchar Collectibles, Chris Butner Lucas, Chris Estes, Christian Billick, Clay, CM Drunk, Colby Mayo, Colin Ketchum, Colin Roach, Conductor of the Pentatrain, Connor Fitzsimmons, Connor Hoffman, Cookies for Sale, Cool Whip Tim, Corey King, Sci-Fi, Dalton Dunbar, Daniel, Danny Lamp, Danny Gunk, Dar, Dick Girl, Derek Barnhart, Devin Geertz, Digi, Dylan Stapleton, D. Lopez, Doug Dimmadome, owner of the Dimmsdale Dimmadome, Drake Hughley, Drew Ashford, Drink Every Time Becky Says Garbage, Dumsky, Dylan Ariola, Sean or Eat Hard Sean, Edgar Nation, Eduardo Avila, El Joshi, El Ferreira, Eric Crosby, Eric Ruiz Romero, Aaron Thorne, Isatch, I Support Jenna's. Nope, not going to read the rest of that. Come on. I fool me once, brother. Fishing with Papa J, Fletcher Walpole, Floating, FCMA, for this birthday, Santi got Dirty Dom body pillow, Forever Wrestling, Fruitful Vibes, Game Escape, Gilbert Deans, Goat Man of Cheese, Gunther Killed My Brother Ooze, GXA Man, Heartfelt, Hey Snakes, Hoodie Cam, I'm Rick James Bitch, I'm McNugget, I'm Braun Strowman, I Am The Beef, Isaiah Rodriguez, Isaiah Schaefer, Issa David, It's Mista, It's Astro Kid, It's Christian, Jack Ghibli, Jack Harris, Jackson, Jacob Mueller, Jacob Pena, Jacob Staffel, Jaden Davis, Jaden Solomon Jones, Jake Shavoya, Jacob Kufis, James Brian Balago, Jason Vane, Javier Rodriguez, Jaxian Plays, Jalen Steele, Javion McDuffie, Jay Angel, JC Worley, Gene Carlos Capellan, Jeremiah Finley, Jahihi Ahihi, JJ J-Man, Joe Velez, Joe Romig, John Anthony, Jordan Cancel, Jordan Lynch, Josby, Jose Seja, Joseph, Josh Musto, Juan Strowman, Juicy J 153, Juliana Sarfi, or Juliana, Justin Brooks, Justin Perkins, Justin Rivera, Caden Rivers, Caleb Martin, Kevin Bega, Kuwaiti Rick Boogs, Kyrie Lawrence, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Let's Go Sancho Santi Sucks, Liam, Life of Brian, Lil Shifu, Luis Aguilar, Luke Parker, Luke Sika, Manly Man, Mark, Marnie YCSN, Matthew Dollar, Matthew Oberg, Matthew Watkins, Mossy, Max Dupree, McQueen, Mackay, Meredith Lee, Michael Carlson, Michael Purnell, Michael Paz, Michael Vera, Miguel Paredes, Mikey Rada, Mitchell X, Muhammad Albanai, my dad left to get a Finn Balor singles push, Nathan Tully, David Reyes Amini, Nellen Zach, Nicholas Kyle, Nighthawk, Nino Ray, NyQuil Pad, Noah Booth, Noah Burden, Obi Nobi, Obion, Oil Up Now, Santi 69, Oliver Hammonds, Osama Awad, Pat R., Pat McMark, Pig Nuts, Pimca, Preston Smith, Frody, Prince Vegeta, Puke 1904, Puppet Spanker Johnson, Randy Cooper, Rawest of All Daddies, Reaper God 145, Ricardo Ramirez, Rick Marr, Rick Dutcher, R.I.P. Braun Strowman, Robert Holder, Robert Rogers, Rocky B, Royce Ruffo, Ruben Sanchez, Riley, Sam Duke, Sancho doesn't get a safe place. Sancho has mucho miedo for the snail. Sancho's opinions over Santi's opinions. Santi is our 17-time podcast champion. Santi lives in Canada. Ha 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 ha. Sauce God, Saudi Rig Bug, Scotty Bear 92, Screamo Scott, Semba, Seymour, Bud, Shaggy WWE, Shane, Shaniqua Foss, Shitstain Nakamura, Sir Albertan, Slime Manny 00, Slow Toke Rodriguez, Stephanie Deller, Stephanie Vacar, Lookalike Contest in My Bedroom, Stucky, Super Malachi Galaxy, Taco Bullfish, Taman Bryan, Tanner Cloudus, the 17-time WWE Undisputed Dumbass or Nightmare, the Final Pebble, the Puzzle Taker, Rest in Pieces. So stupid. Vanilla Joe Rilla, Thomas Wright, Timmy Fitzmaurice, Toasty, Tobias Burnett, Tom Lehman, Trent Head, Trevor Harder, Turbo Tyson, Two Slapped Cupid, Tycho, Tyler Free, Tyler Logan, Tyler McGarry, V Charles, Vegan Penguin, Venom, Juan Pablo III, Whaler 30, White Mexican, William Martinez, William Newton, Willie Cecil, Xavier D. Lewis, Zach Zmira, Deadshot, You Stupid, My Reeves, Zach Griffin, Zach Hewitt, Zach Butcher, Zay2K, Zeke Love, Zerg Zito, and Lord BBNJ. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for supporting the Wrestling is Cool podcast at the $15 tier. We appreciate you. And all of you watching around the world, thank you very much. We'll see you guys in the next one. Take care. Be wonderful people. Goodbye.